Well, this is Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest today is Len Savage. Len first was on our program November 1st of 2005, talking about the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. And he's back again today. Some things have happened since November, and you can consider this program an update. You and JPFO were noted in a CRS report. This is also known as the Congressional Research Service of October 5. And I think maybe we should tell people what that report is about and what has been going on since then.
Great. And a pleasure to be here. The CRS report basically put in writing for Congress in a memorandum that verifies what JPFO and I knew all along, and that's that ATF did not have any testing procedures. And I don't think the impact of that memorandum has been fully impacted yet, because every case prior to the Wren case, which happened in November, which was also after that report, weren't running with any procedures and could make it up as they went along and could manufacture evidence. Nobody would ask any questions. And nobody's even looked into the previous cases and how many people now are sitting in prison because the ATF manufactured evidence against them.
You're sure our government would do something that dastardly?
Well, I wouldn't have believed it until I saw it with my own eyes, personally experienced it. U.S. v. Wren was a case that happened last November. I was a technical advisor for the defense and was supposed to testify as an expert witness in the case. About midway through the trial, there seemed to be a little bit of pandemonium going on, and the outcome of that was that the government dismissed all the firearms charges against Mr. Wren if Mr. Wren would accept a plea bargain of one count of mail fraud and one count of a false statement to an ATF officer. And I think they said they would recommend the sentence of a $100 fine and a six-month probation. And being 60 years old, he took the deal, or spend another $500,000 to continue the fight. That's the problem. You're worn down financially. It was just a very interesting trial, and I think in the future its importance will play out. But what was important, more than anything, is that the judge finally picked up on the fact that the ATF added a conversion device and it had altered the evidence to make it go full auto. She told them that they could test the evidence in front of the jury, but only if they removed the conversion devices. And they were embarrassed by this. And that's when all things kind of fell apart there in that trial. The ATF since then certainly let me know that they didn't appreciate my presence at the trial. And more recently has sent me some paperwork that would be termed interesting, to say the least, possibly threatening.
Before we get to the paperwork, Len, let's just spend one more moment or so on the government's attitude towards even its own prosecutor during the trial when they realized that they're going to lose.
Oh, goodness, yes. Out in the hallway, when this ruckus was raised, I was sitting on a bench, and the U.S. prosecutor, Mr. Jonathan Gasser, came walking by, and he got a cell phone because they're allowed to have cell phones in federal buildings, and just a very interesting conversation, even just the one end, and I don't care. He kept repeating, he says, you can have this position. I'm only temporary anyway. I'm only acting. And then he hangs up, and he looks at me, and he goes, that was the U.S. Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez, chewing me out for offering Mr. Wren such a deal. And stormed off, and I just stood there open mouth. I couldn't believe it. The Attorney General of the United States was actually monitoring this one little lowly trial and what the ATF was doing, and was upset because the U.S. Attorney pretty well figured out something fraudulent was going on and pulled the plug on those charges. It appeared to be. I can't tell by trying to read all the spin that happened after the trial. Something happened that was very interesting, that a cabinet-level individual would be monitoring such a trial that shouldn't mean anything.
That is fascinating. Well, you were going to mention some letters that you received from ATF in the last month or so. You want to tell people about their arbitrary and capricious approach to doing business?
Well, We now have some things documented I would like to share with you. One, we now know, and it's in writing, that the ATF is above the law. We've always asserted that they acted that way, but now they assert that they are. On April 4th, an assistant director wrote me a piece of correspondence and specifically stated that the employees of the ATF are statutorily exempted from having to follow the NFA or GCA.
Explain to people what the NFA-GCA is.
All right. The NFA is the National Firearms Act, and the GCA is the Gun Control Act of 1968. For the most part, these are the two statutes that the ATF exists for, that their existence is only required because of these two statutes, and that's their sole purpose in life, to define whether or not things are under the purview of the NFA or GCA. What this means is that an employee at the ATF could turn around and send you through the U.S. mail a machine gun, off, no paperwork, no nothing, and say, Mr. Zellman, we've now declared this not to be a machine gun. We'd like you to have this. We'd like you to possess this. This isn't even a firearm. This is off the books, off the record, and it's all yours. All right? And then they could come back later and saying, what are you doing possessing that? You know possession of that's against the law. We want to prosecute you. Did you know? And if you said, hey, wait a minute, but they illegally transferred it to me, then no. You could be prosecuted for illegal possession, that's something that the government has given to you and put in your possession in the first place. They threatened me with it, and again, they documented. I couldn't believe it. They gave me the item and says, you know, this item is against the law and needs to be registered, and if you don't do it, you need to abandon it, or we're going to prosecute you. After they gave me the item. But they said, well, didn't you violate the law by illegally transferring it? Oh, no, we're statutorily exempted. We can't be in violation of these two statutes. And they pointed out, cited, the verse in the law that says that's it. It's even more arbitrary. When the most recent article in SWAT magazine, Boot the BATF, which was about your efforts and mine and a particular, the DVD, BATF fails the test, when that happened, the government seemed to be rather upset at that. And then immediately after that went to print, I received three letters in succession, all dated the same day, all negative. And I won't even go into the technical aspects of the letters, and they were technically wrong. But there's some things involved in some of this paperwork that's on its face is far more intriguing and far more valuable than just the technical things that the ATF got wrong. I thought it was rather interesting that about basically a week after they received their copy, I received these three nasty letters all dated the same day. So it's been a tough time.
You got all these letters from BATF saying, well, we've changed our mind. Just because we told you could do something 9 months ago, we've decided to change our mind. I assume you did not ask for the reconsideration, and I assume that the firearms tech branch does not normally do this, or is this something new?
The reconsideration letter, one of the three, where upon reconsideration they decided to revoke a previous classification. And no, this isn't something that you normally get. I've never received one before. We had an item, and actually an accessory that my company had designed over a year ago. We had submitted it because we wanted to be lawful to Tech Branch to verify that this was compliant and not under the purview of the National Firearms Act or the Gun Control Act of 1968. They sent the item back to me and told me that it was not a firearm. It was not a machine gun. It did not contain the frame of a firearm, nor did it contain the frame of a machine gun. It was nothing. It was parts. It was an accessory. And my company started to go into production on these and had sold a few units. 9 months later, after being threatened by Mr. Nixon for showing up at the Wren case, I get this letter stating that upon reconsideration, they didn't say why they would go back and reconsider something. The motivation for the reconsideration, I think, is really fascinating. They claim to always be under budgeted and behind on everything, and yet they had so much time on their hands they could just go perusing the files and say, you know what, I'm going to reconsider this one. Or was there something a little bit more nefarious involved, like maybe a little retribution? Maybe they wanted to send a clear message to the industry of don't ever show up in a federal courthouse and tell us that we've made a mistake in our testing. And I think they wanted to send that message loud and clear to the industry and have. So they've gone back on their word, and even though we've got it in writing stating that it is nothing, it's not a firearm, they now say, nope, nope, this is a machine gun. These are all going to have to be registered. These are all illegal. And it was done just to create financial harm and to teach me a lesson for speaking out against them.
This is Talking to America. Our guest today is Len Savage, and we're talking about the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, or otherwise known as the Bureau of Arbitrary Technical Findings and Edicts. And today we're definitely talking about some edicts from the government criminals at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. If you could give us a little more information or insight into the terms that they were using, characteristics and features of the weapons, actually the non-weapon that they're talking about, and also what you think that portends for all the guns in America when the BATF is talking about characteristics and features.
Yes, sir. That's very important because they got caught fudging tests. So they no longer test any submissions at Firearms Technology Branch. Now they're evaluating them on their design characteristics and features. And the features and the characteristics that they're pointing out and saying, this is what makes this a machine gun. We have a big problem because almost every firearm has the same characteristics and features that they're calling out. It's very scary because they're setting a precedent here that down the road, your Ruger 10/22 is going to be discovered to have the design characteristics and features. You know, it can take a high-capacity mag. It can be made to do this. You can put this stock on it. You can make it look, you know. This is all about appearances. Haven't we heard this before? Didn't this expire? It sounds to me like the ATF has taken it upon themselves through reinterpretation of existing regulations to basically litigate. I mean, they're making law through reinterpretation. They're short-circuiting Congress and the president and decided, you know, that Clinton gun ban we had, the assault weapons ban, well, we want to bring it back, but we don't want to be troubled with that bothersome thing in Congress and votes and president's signature. Let's just reinterpret what we got and go right back to where we were anyway. And that seems to be the case. When you start talking about features and characteristics, you're not talking science, you're talking appearances. And it's a very slippery slope, as we know.
Yeah, the previous ban really was based simply on cosmetics, as most people know, or else they should know. Well, giving all this flip-flopping by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, how's a jury going to figure it out when this finally goes to trial and all these people who have been erroneously put in jail because of the actions of the government criminals, how's a jury going to figure all this out?
First of all, that's a great question. Now, what the jury's going to see is a man in a three-piece suit who says he's been working for the government for decades come out and give a bunch of technical-sounding stuff. It's so many millimeters long, so many millimeters wide, shoots a 7.62 by whatever millimeter cartridge. But there's no way for them to know whether this man is a real expert, whether this man is a high school dropout. They're not going to know any different. Here's a question for you. If in 9 months the ATF can't figure out whether something is or isn't even a firearm or is or isn't even a machine gun, in 9 months, if they can't figure it out, how in the world is the jury going to figure it out? If the regulations are so vague that the government's own experts cannot discern them, then aren't they unconstitutionally vague and overly broad? If their own experts can't figure it out, there's no way a jury with a finite amount of time to figure it out is going to be able to. I see a toenail hold for a striking down of the Gun Control Act of 1968 and the National Firearms Act of 1934 through the ATF's handling of the regulations. Regulations are interpretations of the law. And this is very strange because the ATF can say, okay, we're going to create this regulation for this law that Congress wrote and the president signed. And they seem to think that they can go back and reinterpret these, and just short-circuit Congress, and they can't. You're not allowed to do that, and there's a constitutional mechanism to prevent that. And that's if it's unconstitutionally vague or overly broad. Well, they've now documented the fact that they, the experts of the United States of America, the government, on one day says that, no, this is unequivocally our answer for this item, and then 9-10 months later says, no, we're taking the opposing point of view now, and citing the same reasons in both letters. So they have just proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that even they cannot discern the regulations.
You mentioned Congress, and I guess the question is, this is really based on your own gut feeling. Do you think the gun owners have any friends in Congress? Because, you know, some effort has been made to bring all this information to certain individuals in the U.S. Congress, the Jim Sensenbrenner crowd, and actually some Congress people who are quite decent, and yet nothing is happening. Nothing is getting done as of yet. So do we really have any friends in Congress?
A very few, unfortunately. We have those that, when they want our vote, are there, and they'll be there come election time. We have Phil Gingrich, who's stayed on top of this now for two and a half years, has introduced H.R. 1603, or the Fairness in Firearms Testing Act. He can't get anywhere, but he's hung in there, and so is Senator Chambliss here in Georgia, tried to do everything he can to get this moving in a direction where something's going to be done. The Oversight Committee in the House that oversees the ATF, Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security, rather fitting, is the ATF seems to be able to do all three.
A feather flock together, you know.
Well, they seem to be timid. They seem to be afraid of the ATF. Miss Stucco, who gave me the same letter telling me that they are statutorily exempted from having the foul laws that they're enforcing, told the Congress that she was seeking to induce voluntary compliance. She just testified the end of March, and then 4 days later sent me a letter stating that I was not allowed to call the ATF anymore. I'd lost my phone privileges, my fax privileges, and my email privileges because they are upset that I had submitted 30 different products since 2002, and I guess I had used up all my minutes, per se. I'm not quite sure that they have the authority to do that, but that's what they've told me. I'm not allowed to contact them anymore. So it's interesting. It's going to be a situation to see whether or not Congress comes to the rescue or not, but except for a very few voices, nobody's jumping to our aid.
Well, I can't say that I'm surprised. It appears that some of your rights have been violated, more than just Second Amendment rights.
This is no longer a Second Amendment issue. This is a First Amendment issue. A federal law enforcement agency is now openly hostile with me. I sought redress to grievance. I pointed out something that I felt that they were doing wrong. I first brought it up with the ATF. They didn't like that idea, and then brought it up with members of Congress and tried to raise awareness so that we could rectify it. Now that agency, the BATFE, is openly hostile towards me, and the ATF has used the power of the United States government to deny me my property. This has cost me, very conservatively, and just lost contracts alone, $450,000. We're approaching the $500,000 mark that this has cost me since last August. Members of that agency have used the color of authority, their badge, to exact revenge and punishment. There's been attempts to set me up, to entrap me. Certainly attempts to just rewrite history and say, you know, we're now going to reclassify this so that you can't sell this anymore, so that we can cost you dollars and cents. To send a clear message to anybody else thinking of seeking redress to grievance with this particular agency. What I'm astounded by is that members of Congress have been watching this, and I know of other organizations that were also very close to members in Congress. I'll say their name, the NRA. These members of Congress wanted me to talk to these people. These people don't even take my calls.
Len, when you say these people, who are these people?
Specifically, the federal liaison of the NRA, Jason Wiemey. He's been given copies of these letters and say, look, there you go. There's proof that even they can't discern the regulations. You know, we need your help in Congress to convey this. He won't take my phone calls anymore, and said that they're not interested in that. And I just can't help but get the feeling that because it's not their kind of firearm, or because it's not about sporting clays or hunting, and because it's about firearms and technology and issues that are pretty dry for them, they're just not interested. And I was just dumbfounded, because the NRA is supposed to be, you know, fighting for gun rights, but it seems almost as if they're fighting to keep their foe alive because it's become a symbiotic relationship where they both need the money. The ATF needs the NRA so that they can raise the drumbeat in Congress to raise their budget, and the NRA needs the ATF so that they can raise the drumbeat with their donations, and that each one kind of mutually needs the other one to survive. So that's my take on it.
Well, you're not alone. Other people have also told me the same thing. I guess the other fair question to ask from my perspective is, it appears that because you associated with Jews for the preservation of firearms ownership, that you have been even more abused by BATF. Is that a fair assumption, or am I pushing the envelope?
No, I'd say that's a pretty fair assumption. Only one time had the current chief of Firearms Technology Branch ever brought up your name. They've told me many times, how dare I express my opinion on your website, and that I was threatening them by speaking my opinion on various websites. And only once could they utter JPFO. They couldn't even say the full name. It seemed to really bother them to even speak it. So, yeah, they know it. They seem to be afraid to even speak your name, and I for the life of me, can't understand why, unless, of course, they're anti-Semitic in some way.
Well, they'll have to tell us that, won't they? Or they can deny it. What are the dangers you see to regular Americans, not just gun makers or gun owners, based on the experience you're now having and some of the changes now in interpretation and the way they're trying to manipulate the law and the regulations?
It's a very dangerous precedent. They've circumvented our system. You know, new laws are supposed to go through Congress, be signed by the president, many checks and balances along the way. This dangerous reinterpretation, what's to keep them from reinterpreting other things or other, you know, you got to wonder if other agencies within the government aren't watching with morbid curiosity to see if they actually get away with this. Why would you need to go through Congress and get a new law when you can just, you know, rewrite it and reinterpret it to suit your needs? It's extremely dangerous. And it doesn't just apply to gun makers or gun owners. Here's just a wild what if. You're walking in a grocery store. You walk in front of somebody pushing a cart, and a traffic cop who happens to be in the grocery store gives you a ticket for jaywalking. He says, well, I've reinterpreted the law. You know, that's to prevent you from getting harmed, and you're not supposed to cross in front of traffic. And even though this isn't real traffic, since this was traffic and she had a load, I'm going to give you the ticket anyway because that's how I'm reinterpreting the law. Pretty scary stuff if you know, that's a ridiculous example, but that's basically what the ATF is saying now. Even though that this is meant to be out in the street and with motor vehicles, I'm now going to apply this here because I'm allowed to. Nobody says that they're allowed to. I can't find anywhere in the law that states that they even have the authority to reclassify. It only says they have the power to classify. Doesn't say anything about doing it again, but, you know, they just usurp that authority. They take it, and they figure, to quote them, they'll let the courts figure out whether or not they really have that authority.
Okay, well, Len, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. This has been Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest has been Len Savage. And remember, if you won't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talking to America is a production of JPFO.org.